This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we talk to well-known guests about their lives, their careers, and negotiating those difficult moments along the way.
That was really Radio 4, and I'm here for it. I absolutely loved that. That was so lovely. Oh, that was like you've been doing it for decades. That was beautiful.
Who are the stalwarts on Radio 4? I'm just trying to think who that would be like.
I don't know.
Because neither of us listen to Radio 4.
Do you know what? I'm the sort of person that I would like to give out. I would like to pretend and give out the idea that I listen to Radio 4, but I'm actually a Radio 5 Live guy.
I'm a Five Live guy.
Yeah. I'm actually even, and this is a bit, you know, to admit on the air, I'm a Five Live guy sprinkled with a bit of Talk Sport. Mainly because their commentary is for games, but I sometimes will keep it on. I'm mostly a White Van man.
Yeah, I have to say I'm similar. What I think about those two channels is particularly like after Saturday matches, you've got 6:06 or you've got like the phone in on whatever the equivalent is on TalkSport, and they always get the most ridiculous fans coming on.
If you want the more cartoony one, you go to TalkSport. Yeah. Because 6:06 does have they tone it down a bit. But
even on there they have some mad
even
people.
On yeah, also. But Savage and Sutton are actually very good on there.
Yeah,
they
can, yeah.
They are Robbie Savage. I know, like his figure of fun. He's actually very, very good.
He is very good. Yeah, and Chris Sutton is excellent as well. Sort of playing this sort of curmudgeon, kind of contrarian.
We're talking about getting Chris Sutton on the pod.
We will. We'll get Chris Sutton.
I think he'd be good, and Savage as well. But anyway, sorry. I really enjoyed your intro. It was really just like silky smooth. I really liked it.
Well, thank you very much.
I thought I'd let you know because you know we're both in the game, aren't we? Of letting people know when we enjoy things they do.
Absolutely. Well, talking of enjoyable things, this week's podcast was extremely enjoyable.
Oh, so nice. Yeah, it's a wonderful Chanel. What?
Let's just keep like every time we do something slightly better than normal, we'll just we'll make a big thing out of it.
We're not very good at the old smoke and mirrors, are we? most radio professionals. Oh, I saw what's her name on the news. Who's that presenter? She's on BBC. It's like News at 10 or something. She's Sophie Raworth.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
And I was watching her do a bit to hosting, sort of anchoring, basically.
Yeah.
The main coverage. I think it was last night. And so many things went wrong. She threw to a reporter in Putney. Audio didn't work. Then she came back. She had to really quickly. Then obviously they're like going through the auto cue, like next. And then that didn't quite work. But she was so like smooth. And you and me, we've done a bit of broadcasting now for quite a while. You probably notice it. You're like, oh, she's done well there. To the average punter, they wouldn't have noticed it. But I thought she was so slick at like spinning these plates. I thought it was, real pro. I remember thinking, no wonder she's at BBC One.
Yeah, and that, I think it was a live broadcast, I assume, as well, was it?
Yeah.
So that's really tricky. So, yeah, well, hats off to Sophie.
Yeah, she was brilliant. Anyway, what were we talking about? Sorry, I derailed it again.
I was saying we had a really enjoyable podcast this week with Chanel Creswell.
Sorry, it's buddy time cough. Oh my word, what a fantastic guest. So lovely. Real down to earth, just like easy to get on with.
Yeah.
Some great insight into her career. Really opens up at times.
Yeah.
Talked at times about things she hadn't talked about before, sort of in, you know, which is really nice. So I thought about this we're recording this a few hours later after the pod, so I had dropped my daughter off at a ballet this afternoon. I went for a little wander and got a coffee, and I got a white hot chocolate. don't know why I lied.
Yeah, lying to yourself.
I'm lying to myself. Just accept who you are, mate. But I was thinking about the pod today, actually, and how enjoyable it was, and how it sort of flowed nicely from silly chat, and I'm doing my usual thing of telling you about my stupid self-tapes and stuff, and this week's is an absolute doozy. But going into the serious chat, and I was thinking, oh, actually, you and I create a sort of quite safe space for people to come on and open up, and that's nice, but obviously it takes our guests being open to that anyway, and I thought Chanel was brilliant, and right from the first minute you could tell she was going to be a great guest and got on with us really easily, and you think, oh, it's going to be a really good one, and it was so much nice stuff in there. I really, really enjoyed it.
And echo all the things you've just said. Yeah, really enjoyed talking to Chanel, like, and she's a fantastic actress as well, like, going back to obviously some of her early roles in the This Is England, God, because there was the spin-off series as well of that, but the film initially, and obviously that process of getting into that movie and the way that Shane Meadows works. Obviously, we've talked to Vicky McClure before about that method and how exciting it is for an actor to be through that creative process. But then obviously we talked about the other side of it, you know, like doing self-tapes and stuff, or being in a room where it's not quite as comfortable sometimes. And that was really fascinating.
Makes you realise how special Shane Meadows is, actually, and the space he gives performers, especially when he's working with young people.
Yeah.
The space for them to sort of grow and practice and she said it's more like workshops.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Well, and you see the movies and the it's not acting. It's like real. Like that's what's brilliant about a lot of his movies, is that it doesn't feel like you're watching actors. You're watching real people, but that's obviously his brilliance, and the people that he gets for those roles are able to adapt to that and can bring out very natural performances. But it was great to hear about that, and obviously she's got some really exciting new projects. She's been doing lots of kind of the last few projects she's been doing where she's been playing like real life characters, and she's got this amazing Vardy versus Rooney courtroom show that's going to be on Channel 4 very soon. So I'm really excited to see it. I kind of was following the whole controversy around that story. If people listening haven't heard about this, so
I would say if they haven't heard of the thing, just watch the show cold.
Yes. Well, yeah, then, maybe we shouldn't give it away.
Yeah, and then realize it's all real.
I won't go into what it's about, but it's fascinating. Well, I mean, you if you obviously we're talking about it, you can go and look up on the internet if you want to really find out, but I think it'd be a fascinating take on that, and I think you'll be fantastic in the role, so I can't wait to see
that. So we'll put a link below for information about that show and when it's out. I think she said mid-December, so definitely something to check out. Also, a link below will also be to this week's sponsors, which is Babbel, and there'll be a longer advert later on in the public for the public people, but just for our how do that again and something else in the link below will be this week's sponsors, which is Babbel, where you can take learning a second language and make it fun. And there's a code for our listeners. If you go to babbel.com, babbel.com/podcast22, that's podcast, podcast, and then the numbers 22, and the promo code is blank. Then there's an offer for blank listeners of 3 months free. And there'll be a longer advert as well later on for our public listeners.
But we're giving our patrons a little extra there because they can get
there.
We're good, aren't we?
We are. And so are Babbel.
Yeah, thank you.
Someone else is good at what she does and at being a blank guest.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, just at this point, it's just second nature. Is Chanel Cresswell. Should we get into the episode?
Yeah, because I'm laughing now.
Okay. This is the wonderful Chanel Cresswell on the Blank Podcast.
Well, it's lovely to have you on. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I see you're quaffing a drink there. Is that a coffee? Are you a coffee person in the morning?
I am. I don't mind. Like, I'm either water or coffee. I've got one of those like fancy coffee machines. I'm like, ooh, let's treat myself. So I have to make sure I use it for it to be worth what I bought it for.
Exactly.
I was like, right, you are having a coffee every morning, whether it's sunny or raining or snowing, you know. So yeah, make sure I make good use of it.
Yeah, you're exactly really the same. Yeah, I've really committed to my coffee machine. It's one of those ones with the, like, I feel like a barista when I'm doing it. You know, it's got one of those thingies on it where you twist it. I don't know what that's called. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used to work in a bar. It was my dad's bar pub. And we used to have coffee mornings with a lot of, like, you know, like elderly customers. And we did like coffee and biscuits and we'd take them over to them, you know, so they could sit down and relax after market day. I'm not kidding. We had a list of coffees, like 20 on back order. And my sister she was my manager. And she was like, you're not making them fast enough. I was like, I cannot make these coffees any quicker than what I'm doing. I was like, two jobs, like doing this, pouring them all. Oh my God, it was a nightmare. But I tell you what, at least they got a nice warm coffee at my stressful expense.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't get in the way of my craft, okay? I have to do this a certain way. This is important.
Yeah. Exactly. My sister used to go, you haven't done the dusting on the top of like a snowflake or whatever. I'm like, seriously, because that's what?
I don't think Edna cares. She just wants her coffee.
I really don't think Edna cares about a snowflake at the minute. She's shivering in the corner. She wants a coffee, Charlotte.
It's funny. I went through a phase where I used to go to my local pub and not on a coffee morning, just like evening, whatever, order a tea or a coffee because Is that bad etiquette to order that in sort of like...
What, at night time?
Is that annoying as a bar person?
Yeah. Because that means they've got to down anchor, drop everyone else that wants a pint like a normal person, which you should be having instead, and got to go to the coffee machine, give the spout a rub down, get the jug going. Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, I just like to be centre of attention wherever possible.
Yeah. Just have a Coke or a lemonade.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Person.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
So, you know, you brought up in Derby. You're from Derby originally. I've been to Derby. I've only been to Derby once, and I played a gig there. I think it was at the Old Vic. I don't know if it's still there. We kind of arrived in the dark and left in the dark. So I don't actually remember Derby very well.
I've also done a gig at Derby.
Have you? Oh, there you go, you see.
That. Yeah, yeah. At the Blessington, I think it's called. So, is that right, Blessington? Can't remember what they're wrong.
I'm well known for my terrible at geographics. Like, just
so
just give me a train ticket. Let me know what platform and that's my job done. Like, I'm terrible. Like, even driving around, I'm glued to my sat nav. Like, it's a running joke within the family that I've lived around here all my life and I still don't really know the roads. And then my mum, like, tries to describe all the roundabouts, what's there. And I'm like, Mum, stop. There's no point. I'm not a homing pigeon. I have no clue. I am a mole in a hole and that's it.
We have sat navs for a reason.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 2022 for a reason. Not born in 2022. But I can use the technology of 2022 to help me out. That's all I need. Thank you.
So, but what was living in Derby and growing up in Derby like? Did you have a nice childhood?
Yeah, I mean, I come from you know, a working class background. My dad there's me and three other siblings, and when we were growing up, times were okay. I mean, sometimes they were quite difficult. We did live quite frugally, I guess, whatever that word is, at a certain stage in our lives growing up, being four of us, and my dad like working very hard on various businesses, you know, that takes its toll. I mean, I didn't see my dad that much from what I remember. So my mum ran the house and my dad worked all hours and very unsociable hours. So it was very, very humble beginnings. And then as I got older, obviously my dad's, you know, sacrifices that he made kind of paid off for him. And he, you know, was a self-made man from probably when I was about 15, 16. But I think the lovely thing is having watched that growing up, I've probably got a very vast knowledge of like, I've got more of a business knowledge, I think, more than an academia knowledge, just because of my upbringing. you know, academics and things like that wasn't really my strong point. I kind of I've always learnt to graft and use my mouth and yeah, my general knowledge, I think, to get me to where I am and things like that. So yeah, growing up, you know, there's a lot of us with four of you. You know, you have to wait your turn to go to the bathroom, you have to wait your turn to get to the shower. You know, there was a lot of that going on. So I think definitely growing up with four of us, and then your parents who, you know, always showered first and had the bath water first yeah. and things like that. You kind of, I think as an adult as well, that's learned me to take a step back a lot. So yeah, it was lovely. I mean, I enjoy Derby. I did think about doing the London thing and things like that, but I'm a bit of a home bird. I like the countryside. I like the quiet. You know, I like to just shut my door and like hide away sort of thing. You know, my local pubs, the local people, that's what I grew up. I mean, as I said, I worked in my dad's pubs in between jobs and, you know, still on the same wage as everybody else. You know, he taught us well. He taught us to work hard and, you know, to stand for ourselves in a sense. And even when he did well for himself, you know, he didn't mind treating us and things to the nice thing, but you had to work the same as everybody else. And I'm glad that he showed us that. And my mum works very hard as well. Four children and a house to run is not easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, being the parent of two children is, you know, is full on, and obviously Jim knows that as well. But yeah, four.
Yeah. Four. Yeah. All close. We were all 1 year apart.
Wow. Giles, we talk about school quite a lot in this podcast, don't we? It comes up quite a lot. I'm just wondering, what were languages like for you at school? Did you do languages? How did you find them?
I always found learning languages really challenging. And yeah, I didn't take languages in GCSE. It was just too beyond me.
Yeah, I did do GCSE. I did French in GCSE. You'll be delighted to know. Well, mate, you'd like to know. I got an A. Nice. As they say in French, an A, which is probably one of the reasons I passed. But then I did it to A level. Because I thought, well, I'm good at this, and I got an E. Oh. It was the jump up was so difficult, and I never really took it on from then. I sort of left it, which is a bit sad, really, isn't it?
It is really, and it's something I've always wanted to get back into.
Well, you'll be delighted to know that thanks to Babbel, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you're traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized languages that you'll actually use in the real world. Doesn't that sound good?
It sounds amazing. I want to learn more about Babbel.
Well, Babbel makes learning a language quick and easy because it focuses on natural conversation. That makes sense.
Of course. It's always the best way to learn by just chatting to people. It's also got 15-minute lessons, and they are designed to be the most efficient and effective way to learn a new language.
Babbel's lessons are created by over 150 language experts, aka real people. So you learn how to have a real world conversations, things that you'd actually use, not just meaningless phrases like le cat, le chat est sous la table. When have you ever gone abroad and said the cat is under the table, Giles?
Never. What's brilliant also, Jim, is Babbel's interactive lessons aren't like just talking to a robot. They're voiced by native speakers using a modern conversation-based method. So in no time, you'll be speaking confidently about real topics like cats under tables.
Or what was the other one? Ue, la bibliothèque. I need to know where the library is. Every city I go to in France or French-speaking world, I have to find the library. Babbel's teaching methods have been scientifically proven to be effective across multiple studies. There you go.
Yeah, and also, I mean, we've obviously been speaking a lot of French, but they do 14 different languages. Oh. So it includes Spanish, French, Italian, Germany, and loads more.
Fantastic. What a choice. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you improve your pronunciation and accent. And that is very helpful when you're abroad.
Yeah, it's good to go. I mean, my bonjours aren't too good.
that was okay.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you to lie. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, or even join live classes with a language teacher.
Fantastic. So many options. So start your new language learning journey with Babbel today.
Right now, Babbel is offering our listeners 3 months free with the purchase of a 3 month subscription with the promo code blank. That's BLANK. What is that, Jim?
Blank. BLANK. That's a great deal. That's a great deal. So go to babbel.com/podcast22 and then use the promo code blank for an extra 3 months free.
That's Babbel, BABBEL.com/podcast22, promo code blank, BLANK.
Babbel, language learning that works.
Yeah.
She's actually quite crazy. I don't know how she survived.
That's actually wow.
Yeah, when you sort of think in hindsight of those things, you think, oh Christ, how
that
did we get through?
That
is
intense. I think those kind of life skills though you talk about there, I think really important, you know, in terms of sort of working hard and having those almost street smarts and that business sense. I think those are really useful skills to have. But it's interesting you're talking about your dad and like the sacrifices he made and stuff, because I've got closer to my dad in recent years than I was sort of growing up. And I had a really, really great conversation with him recently. And he sort of hinted that, because I think as growing up as a kid, like you look at your parents and they probably annoy you and they're always there and stuff. And then you don't realize they might have had times that are a bit more wobbly. And he was sort of saying, you know, there were a few times that were a bit more wobbly than we ever let on. And now as an adult looking back, I was like, oh man, actually, yeah, dad...
I get
You really appreciate. Yeah, I get it completely. Mm. I get it. What they went through and what he did and the sacrifices he must have made. And yeah, it's just something about growing up, I think, maybe puts that in perspective.
Yeah. And having that knowledge now, it's like they try and tell you when you're kind of in that like 18, 19, 20s that work does stress them out, but you still don't understand. And people try and tell you and you just don't get it until all of a sudden you've got your own house, your own cars to run. And you're like, now I understand. That when he came home and he probably didn't have much time for us, why, you know, and it is, it's all if some, you know, if hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, he worked very, very hard. They both did, but it's quite funny with our family because we have a really dry sense of humor. So everybody, nothing is ever taken seriously. Like everybody is always getting absolutely ribbed with what they're wearing or what I get told on a daily basis to go and get a proper job all the time. My job's not real. They work hard. I do nothing. So it's nice also that within that, you know, I mean, I grew up watching all my friends' families having like normal jobs and coming home and all having dinner together. And one of my best friends, her parents were Christian. And so having like this really calm setting and I used to go around there and it used to seem like this lovely safe haven of like calmness. And then you'd go back to my house and it'd be absolutely crazy. Where's dad? He's not getting in till whatever time because he's been sorting out his business. You got mum running around after the boys and one's cracked their head open and they're fighting it. You know, it was. But as I say, we don't take anything very seriously. So we all look back now and laugh at it.
Yeah. That was me, by the way, as a kid. I cracked my head open twice. That was my role in the family to be that kid, just to make life more difficult.
Yeah. There's always that one kid that's always got the head split open.
Yeah.
It was me. I think we lived in Spain because my dad's job. And so I fell down a marble. Everything's marble. In Spain, fell down a marble staircase and cracked my head open. Had to have like 20 stitches. Recovered 6 months later, fell off my bike and hit my head on a stone and cracked it all open again.
Oh, that's just again, traumatic for
like
everyone
I said,
else.
Center of attention. I just want to be center of attention. Whatever.
You need
oh, God, it was
this.
Horrible. It was horrible. Yeah.
Poor You've traumatized dad, really. Everyone
yeah.
else.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
The
really
benefit
put them
of yourself.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, that's my role in the family.
So when did the kind of acting start? Were you doing that at a young age? Was that something you were into?
It's weird because my memory's not great. So I can't really remember. Apparently everyone was saying that when I was a lot, lot younger, like 5 or 6, I used to be a bit of a drama queen, which I hate being called, but so many people call it me, I can't deny it. And so, yeah, as I got older, like, I did like my school plays and things like that. And just loads of people just kept going up to my mum and was like, you need to get her into a drama school. You need da-da-da-da. So I did the whole stagecoach thing, which I didn't really warm to because it felt like stagecoach was at the time for people that had plenty of money, and that their parents were kind of taking them there for like more confidence boosting and, oh, let's sing for an hour, let's dance for an hour, let's act for an hour. And it just didn't seem what I wanted to do. I just felt a bit more, I felt a bit more grittier than those sort of people. And so I really begged my mum, like, I went for a couple of years, and there was like an award that they gave to people out of like all the age groups, and I won it the first year I got there. So I thought, oh, okay, well, I must be okay at this. My sister went as well and she didn't get it. So like, as I went over my award, I kind of just looked at her like...
Which I'm sure you still remind her of.
Oh my God, yeah. And then she's going to hate me. So then my mum found this workshop, which was the television workshop, which was more for children that kind of had emotionally been through a lot, which I kind of felt like I had at this point. And because emotional intelligence was something that from a young age all of us had, just within certain situations within our family. I just felt like I knew a lot and had seen a lot at a young age, and so I don't know, I just felt like I was a lot older than other people around me. So we went to this like workshop where, you know, kids were taken seriously and they'd all come from like different walks of life and backgrounds, and you know, and so I went one Easter and auditioned, and there was like just so many children there. And my sister had auditioned the year before and didn't get in. So,
which I also remind her about.
Yeah. Now I've got it twice.
You got it twice. Yeah. You got to get a hat trick.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, I'm not going to bother. But, you know, my mum dragged me there and Ian Smith was there, and he kind of just looked at me over his glasses, and he was really intimidating at the time. And I was like, hi. And he was like, is this your first time you've been, you've auditioned? And I was just like, yeah. I mean, I must have only been about 10 or 11. I was like, oh, well, I doubt you'll get in then, but go through.
And I was Oh my God,
that is brutal. Yeah. And I kind of looked back at my mum like, as if you've brought me here. Like, what the hell? Like, it was kind of like child abuse. I was like, oh my God. She's like, go on, I'll see you, like, whatever. So anyway, I got a recall and I ended up getting in. And that was basically the start of my journey. And it was like nothing I'd ever been to. It definitely wasn't like a stagecoach. It was taken very seriously.
Yeah.
And you were treated like an adult. And so, yeah, I did that. And then obviously, I mean, everyone kind of knows then the Mr. Shane Meadows came down and was interviewing children for his next film. I didn't know until I read an interview a bit later that he'd already looked at me for Once Upon a Time in the Midlands.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know that at the time. So I kind of went down to this audition and there was just so many people there to the point where you couldn't even get a seat. So I sat on my best friend's knee and I just thought, I'm not going to join in because I just felt like I'd just not got a cat in hell's chance. And that was kind of a lack of confidence on my part, I think. I just thought, why would anybody? There's so many amazing people in here. Why would anyone look over here, sort of thing? You know, I come from Derby. I went to just a normal school. Do you know what I mean? There were just so many things in my head that was eating up at me that just thought, he's not going to look this way. And then all of a sudden, yeah, I just got someone tap me on the shoulder. I think it was Ian, and he was like, you know, he really likes you. And then, yeah, I kind of got the part of playing Kelly, Vicky's younger sister. And I kind of, it's still to this day, and I don't know why, even though I've been doing this since I was 15 years old and I've played so many parts, even when I get a part, the first person I ring is my mum, and it is the same excitement from back then. It's like an acceptance that I've been given. Because you get so many no's in this industry and so many knockbacks where you just sat there questioning yourself, wondering why I did so well. I've watched the self-tape back over and over again. And, you know, ones where I cry and I really get into it and you don't get them. And it's just soul destroying. And so when you get these mini victories, it just stems back from that 15-year-old self of being pulled out of this group of so many people that he picked me that day. It's like something that just reverts back to that. And it's always the same. I ring my mum straight away and I'm like, oh my God. And she's just as excited as I am. And sometimes when I go on set and I'm like, oh my God, I remember getting the call for this part and like they all take it in their stride. They expect to get the phone call that they get it. I don't expect to get it. So when I do, it just seems like a huge prize. It's like winning the lottery for me. And it's never, ever changed.
I think that's really lovely, actually.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I've never taken it for granted. I really haven't. Yeah. Every part that I get means so much to me. It's like, oh my God, they like me. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's that validation that we, you know, yeah. we desperately need as creatives, yeah. isn't it? But it is so lovely to hear that. And also that, you know, you call your mom, and that, I guess maybe because you know, growing up and everything, you probably still quite grounded, you know, in that from your experiences. And so you've got that same excitement every time that you get those opportunities.
It's like a mini success to your story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
because it can take, I mean, growing up more in a business atmosphere, I've seen a lot of people around my parents that have done so well for themselves, and then all of a sudden it just gets taken away from mm-hmm. them for one thing or another. And you kind of just feel like when you get these parts, they're just like brilliant mini successes along your journey. And yeah,
it's good to give yourself the wins, isn't it? I think,
yeah,
when you're in a quite, you know, all creative industries are pretty brutal, and as particularly I think the acting industry, you know, like you say, a lot of the time it's a lot of no's. And so when you get those little mini wins or those big wins, if you're getting a part that you desperately want, then yeah, yeah. you need to celebrate those moments.
Yeah, massively. And I do.
Good.
Yeah, I think that's really nice. And I think, as I'm guessing as well, because I had a self-tape last week for which I couldn't do, because it's for a live event for a supermarket, which I'm not available for.
A live supermarket?
Yeah. Though. I had to play
Supermarket Sweep or something.
Charles, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
I had to play every week. Chanel, I date Charles in my terrible self-tapes. I had a self-tape. I had to play a Christmas turkey. So I had to pretend to squat, and then run across the room squatting like a Christmas turkey, because I'm guessing this is a live event that would happen. I can't do it. I told my agent I'm not available that day because I'm going to...
Yeah. That's like doing a permanent slut drop and not getting back yeah. up. Like, I can't even do that at 32 anymore. How are they expecting you to just drop down to the floor?
No, I know.
Using your squat muscles and just absolutely going A1.
And I'm nearly 40. I'm 40 in 18 months' time. There's no way. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it. I just wouldn't. I'd have embarrassed myself at the live event. But
I'm glad you didn't do that.
Yeah, I'm glad as well, Jim.
Everyone's got a line. And my line is...
Live turkeys.
I'll still do it. If I'm unavailable, I won't do it.
If the money's right, I'll do it.
Yeah,
exactly. If the money's right, I'll do it. But I think it's... Well, what I was going to say, sorry, before sharing that really depressing part of my life, is... It sounds to me like that idea of celebrating those wins and feeling the victory each time gives you a kind of or stops you having a complacency. So I'd imagine at some mm-hmm. point probably you can, because as you said, Chelsea, there's so many no's. So I think enjoying those yeses and having that same feeling as when you were younger, I think, yeah, probably helps you maybe avoid a kind of complacency in the industry.
Yeah, because I'm still imagining you squatting like
that's going to remain with you for the rest of the day.
Sorry,
that's an image we can't get rid of very
across
quickly.
The whole room as well. Like that's yeah. that's a good 20-30 seconds.
That's some good mileage in that turkey. That's some good mileage for a human turkey. Oh, anyway, yeah. Back to the question.
I love my career. I love my life and career. It's very varied.
I've been in that position. I'll tell you a story in a minute. But yeah, I did go for a stage, I think, where I was getting self-tapes and I was just thinking, you know what, I'm just going to get them done as quick as possible, because I kind of just felt like it was when it was COVID and all that was happening, and it just felt like we were all at a dead end. And then I just thought, there was kind of a life-changing experience for me the beginning of this year, and I actually thought, you know what, my life's okay. You know, life's more about smaller things in life. I just kind of felt there was just a life-turning experience for me, and I just thought, you know what, every self-tape, I'm just going to make the most of it, do as much as I can, as much research into these characters that I'm doing, just, you know, really, really go for it. And from that, I've had more of a positive outlook on these. And actually, I've had more fun with them. And yeah, I think, yeah, you know what? If you just make this you're an actress, you enjoy doing it. So make this just a bit of a, you know, a practice run and more of a hobby. Enjoy it and, you know, have fun in, you know, me and my partner have a great time when we're doing these self-tapes. We have a laugh. Just have a different outlook on these. Don't just think, oh God, I'm not going to get it. Here's another one. You know, let's all set it all up, get the lights up, learn the lines. Instead of looking at it at that point of view, twist it around and just think, you know what, you've got an afternoon, just have a little look at your lines, find the funny, find the moments you can embrace and the sadness, and just have a bit of a laugh with it. And I started doing that and I just thought, you know what, this is working better for me. Just enjoy the little hour you have doing the self-tape, or 2 hours, and just enjoy it a little bit more, and then just put it in a box and forget about it.
Yeah. Because if you were in the room, you know, you wouldn't be doing it half-assed. You'd be learning your lines and getting in the zone, and you'd be doing it properly.
Yeah, exactly. So I just thought, you know what? Stop being Mrs. Downer, because it's easy. It's easier to do that. It's easier. That's an easier option.
Yeah.
You just give up and you get all, you know, you get all mopey. You get all, you know, you get all these insecurities. You get in your head. You get depressed. And it's an easy route to take. The hard route to take is to change that. Turn it back. Go the other way. I'm not a massive reader. I'm not the strongest of readers, but you know, I got like a book about, you know, just what was it called? Feel Good or something. I had it just there, but I've moved all my books over there, so I can't exactly go over there and get them. Was it like Feel Good or something? It was a white book with gold writing, and I read it, and I thought, actually, go the other way. Just turn your face the other way, and just think positively as much as you can. And in fact, sometimes you've got to lie to yourself. Sometimes when I'm driving, I'll just smile. And I'm like, this is tricking myself into saying that this is a great day.
Yeah, but that's true. That's a proven technique.
Well, they say that you can't be unhappy if you're smiling or something. Isn't it something like that?
You know, if I'm thinking about, oh God, I'm getting down, I've got that self-tape, so you want to get back? Chanel, shut the hell up. Start smiling. So I'm like this. And I'm like, right, this is the starting thing. And then I think, actually, think of a funny story, or think of what's good in your life. Who do you like? What do you appreciate? And all of a sudden you kind of get on a roll, and then you're okay.
Yeah. I love, imagine driving down the road and be like, wow, that woman's really happy.
She's loving life.
Her life's fantastic.
She loves driving.
Smiling away. Yeah. Inside it's all crumbling. But on the outside, if you trip yourself on the outside, and it'll work its way in.
That idea of like doing the thing though is a technique. So I'm doing a CBT course at the moment, which I've never done before. It's really interesting. It's quite intense, but it's really interesting. And I hope I'm not giving away like any sort of CBT secret here or anything, but like one of the tasks they got us to do is about like sort of short-term versus long-term goals. And one of them is like, find a goal you want to do during the week. And if you get to that moment, whether it's like going to the gym or like reading a book or going for a walk, and then you think, oh, I can't be asked to do this. I can't be bothered. Just like push yourself through it and do it, because the act of doing that, you'll get a sense of achievement, sense of accomplishment. You'll enjoy it because it's something you want to do. And those little bits actually can tot up and then really change the text of your day. And it's really interesting. That's basically what you were saying there.
Yeah, 100%. So like the beginning of the week, or even if it's midweek, whenever you can be bothered to do it, just do it. Like I remember I've started doing hot yoga, hot pod yoga. And so I thought, God, it's one of those things like, oh, I'm going to yoga. And I thought, you know what, just give it a go. There's one in Derby, just go there. So I did. And I tell you what, if I go and I keep up with it, just these little mini things that I do every day just changes my day. And sometimes I really can't be bothered. But I think, you know, I've watched, Friends, everyone knows Friends. It's like, you know, when Chandler's getting married to Monica, it's like, just go and take a shower. Don't think about the wedding.
Take
a shower. How easy is that? So I just think, get out of bed. That's the first step. Well, I can do that. Get out of bed. Just go put your gym clothes on. You like your gym clothes. Go put those on. Get in the car. You like having a drive. Just go get in.
Big smile.
Yeah, big smile. Walk out the house looking like a lunatic with your gym bag. Get in the car. And then all of a sudden, you've absolutely jacked it. You're on the way and you're at yoga and you've got to go in. And just plow through. It's just like doing those little bits at a time, and then all of a sudden you just feel loads better, and then you've accomplished a lot within that week. Just take little steps, you know.
Completely agree. And for me, it's going to the gym. And I have a personal trainer because I know that I am, what's the word, an appeaser or something. So I need someone to tell me to do it. And if they do, I'll do it. But if there's no one there to do it, I won't do it. Right. So I have a personal trainer who I see, Sam. And every week I'm like, oh, God, I'm too busy. Can't be bothered. And the same as you, like, get my gym clothes on, get in the car, get down there. And then I do the session. And every single week, without fail, at the end of the session, I think, oh, I feel great. Oh, I really enjoyed that. And I had a great chat with Sam. We chat about football. And I've started doing, he bought these, you know, like the gymnastic rings that people have in the gymnastics. And he was like mucking around with them. So I started doing those last week. And like, it's really fun. I mean, it's really hard. And he did a video of me doing it. And I look so unaccomplished. I mean, it's embarrassing. But I'm doing something and it makes me feel good. It's obviously like working on my core. And I feel a sense of accomplishment. So yeah, so basically the same thing, getting out and doing it. You nearly always feel better, but it is hard. That bump of getting there and going down the road is difficult. But you're right. If you do it into little bits,
little sections, you just absolutely trick yourself that you're not going there. And then all of a sudden you're at the door and you have to go in.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Yeah. Or just something that you like doing, you know what I mean? Like painting or whatever. I just think it's just very, in fact, I saw him the other day at a friend's screening. I remember I went for a meal with a director and Joe Cole, we know each other through mutual friends anyway, but he came and it was at a time where I was just in that really suffocating, you know, place of like this acting world and all this. And I remember him saying, like, you've got to find a hobby. You've got to find hobbies and things that interest you. So it just doesn't all become about getting work and getting jobs because it's just not healthy. Yeah. And I remember that always stuck with me. And I just thought, actually, Chanel, you're not doing anything. You're just living and breathing this. So every time you don't get a job, it's hitting you 10 times harder because you haven't got a life outside it. Like, it's completely consuming me.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I'm taking that advice. And I did. And I saw him the other day and I said, you know, that advice you gave me, I took it on and it's absolutely changed. Just totally the way that I look at it. And it doesn't matter if I get a job or I don't. I just enjoy the process, you know?
That's amazing.
Mm. Yeah, it's really great. Well, I wanted to ask you about hot yoga, actually. That sounds...
oh, no, wait, also, you're going to tell us your embarrassing...
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about self-tape as well. But firstly, hot yoga. I've only heard that it's really full on. Like, is it horrendous?
I used to do Bikram. That was very full on. That was like an hour and a half. Okay. And the temperature was a lot higher and it was quite intense. Like, it's a bit stricter, I think. So this is like hot pod yoga. So it's like you can kind of lie down whenever you want. You can drink water whenever you want. It's only an hour. It's not as hot. But it's just so mindful and it's really peaceful in there. And it's just an hour purely. I'm not doing an advert for hot pod yoga, okay? And if they are listening, I should get at least a free class or something.
20%.
20% off because it's expensive. But it's something that I do treat myself to, and it's probably the only thing I treat myself to. So, it's really just calm in there, and it's soothing, and you know, it's warm. It's bloody freezing. it's just you kind of focused on all these postures, and it's your body, and it's your mind, and it's your breathing. And when I came out, and like, because I do struggle with anxiety quite a lot and quite severely. And so the whole breathing exercises and techniques that you kind of do in there, I've kind of learned it to use in life as well. You know, just a couple of deep breaths in and out. I'm not one of those that sit and like start meditating in the corner of a room. Like, I'm not that sort of person. I'll just take a few sort kind of breaths and off I go again. I just really enjoy it. When I get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just something that I try and do like four times a week. But once you start going and you get in that routine, you're just in it then, and then you're okay. It's just those first hurdles.
Yeah, I think it's important to have those extracurricular things that you can do and lean on when you're in, particularly if you're having a bit of a difficult time or something. You've got that thing that you can go and enjoy and get something out of. The self-tape thing, though, is interesting because I was going to ask you how you found doing so. So obviously, it seems to be a lot more self-taping now rather than going into a room. Have that been a strange shift for you? I know obviously you're saying you've adjusted to doing self-tapes and you're finding it a bit more fun, but would you prefer it in some ways to be able to go into a room?
Weirdly, and this might be quite controversial in the acting world, but I like a self-tape. I really enjoy them. Some people are brilliant in rooms, and, you know, really charismatic, and, you know, they can work the room. And sometimes I can be like that, but on those days that sometimes I can't, I don't know why, I just have one of those personalities that sometimes I'm on point, sometimes I'm not. Like with anxiety, something can just trigger me and it goes. Sure. So, which to be fair, I'm not really admitted to anybody or anyone, but it can be quite stressful. Like, I've been in rooms and it's been quite severe and I've managed to get out just in time. So I think self-tapes for me was quite a bit of a safe haven. Like, I had my own room, I had an own reader, I could manipulate everything in what I wanted it to look like, how I wanted it to sound. And I have more time.
Yeah.
And I watch it back. I mean, I've been doing TV and film for a long, long time. I think people forget. I've been doing it since I was 15 and I've worked pretty much nonstop until I'm now 32. So I get what I'm meant to be looking for. I kind of know what I want it to look like and things like that. And I kind of get that control when I'm filming it at home.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I kind of like them, if I'm being honest. Mm. Don't get me wrong, as I've got older, the room is a bit more okay for me now. I don't mind it. The casting directors that I meet are all amazing and lovely, and they're really creative in the room. I'm very lucky in that sense. All the casting directors I seem to see are all amazing at what they do. So yeah, I didn't struggle with the self-tape issue. I kind of preferred it in a sense. And then if I had any notes or anything, you know, I'm only a phone call away. Just, you know, let me know of any tips or notes as they give.
Yeah.
And let me do it again, you know. So
yeah, I think that element of control is really important, because in this industry it's obviously out of your hands a lot.
And you don't have any.
You don't have any. No, exactly. So being able to sort of wrestle back any of that, I think, is important. But it's kind of the same with having anxiety, and that's a lack of control as well over your own sort of body and mind as well, which is really horrible. So I completely understand that the idea of doing a self-tape is you just grabbing a little bit of control and power back in a world where sometimes the industry and even your own body and mind is kind of like fighting against you sometimes.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, I've always, like I said, I'm not academic. I can read a script and I know how that person feels. I think it's, you know, and I can kind of show that. That's my job. Yeah. It's not necessarily, here's 20 pages. It's not my learning ability. When I'm on a set, I have no issue with my lines. I never have. But I think there's like a kind of, it's almost like auditions are more structured for people that just have great memories, because it becomes less of a creative space if that's the case. So I think sometimes when you do a self-tape, I can have all of that here and I can do it all, whereas if in the room it's, you know, it's very, very quick, and which I understand, they've got a lot of people to see, it's very hard for casting directors as well to get what they need very, very quickly, but it can just become a bit of a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
And not necessarily a creative process. I've been spoiled with working with Shane. He workshopped people. He bought, people could go in there and they was in control of who they were playing. And even if he had ideas and characters that he wanted you to play, he gave you time to sit and think about those people and come in and play them and hot seat. And, you know, so I just kind of sometimes think that the creative space sometimes isn't there in the room, which is a massive shame because they're missing out on so much.
Yeah, I guess that's the business side of stuff takes over, where you've got you know, money and time and blah 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 comes into fruition, and you don't get that, like, and at the end of the day, what do you get? You don't get maybe as good a thing at the end of it, because you're not allowing those creative processes to take their time to germinate and stuff.
And it can be quite intimidating walking into a room and then there's just like loads of people and a camera staring at you.
Of course,
like, okay, so I remember when I did my Trollid audition, it was quite chilled and I really enjoyed the process. I got them to build the meat counter that I was leaning on and things. I said, because if it's like a fly on the wall vibe, I need the counter. I want the things that she's messing with and playing with and leaning on to make it more natural. I didn't just walk in the room with a piece of paper and just read it. I actually took control of that room, and I must have been having a good day. I just knew what I needed to do, whereas some rooms I go in and I just it's an intimidating space and you just don't feel like you can do that. And then you walk out and you beat yourself up all the way back home that night. You can't sleep, what you could have done, what you even now, I mean, I'm speaking 100 miles an hour, like that's how it makes me feel. And you know, that's how you care about your work and you want to put your best forward for everyone there that's watching and not waste their time. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I do, that's why I like self-tapes. I think it's just because you can kind of build your own creative space and show them that.
Right. Please tell us. We've teased this long enough now. Please tell us this self-tape story.
Oh, I feel like we've really like amped it up now. But it's just one of those situations where when you was told to crouch like a turkey. I was asked to go in an audition once and I had to actually go in the room. So there's loads of people there and it was for an advert. And I didn't know what it was really for. And they was like, right. So if you just like stand on the X, and I'm like, okay, it felt really like I was doing a talent show. And I stood there and everyone's like, it's like they almost had like this cheesy grin on their face. Like they knew what was coming. And they couldn't wait to watch me absolutely like make a fool out of myself. So they're all sat there with big, big smiles like me in the morning when I leave for yoga. That's sort of like. So anyway, I'm sat there and it's like, right, you've got a backpack on. So pretend you've got. So they're doing it in stages. So it's almost like they're unveiling like little nightmares at a time. So it's like, you've got your backpack on. I'm like, right, okay. Right. You stood in a plane. Right, okay. Now you're getting to the edge. I'm like, okay. And then they went, jump. I went, sorry? Like, jump out of the plane. You're jumping out of the plane. And so I was like, right, the wind's blowing at you. So I'm like, oh. And I just stopped and I just went, no, sorry. I said, I can't do this. Like, I literally was like stood on an X with my hands holding onto these makeshift these handles, right, this backpack on, and I'm screaming, looking at the floor with my mouth wide open, and I just all of a sudden just stopped, dropped my arms and went, no, sorry. And I just walked out and I said to a friend that was waiting to go in, I said, I kid you not, that is going to end up on their gag reel for the Christmas party. No jokes about it, don't do it. And I just walked off.
And can you imagine everyone outside the room is like, what the hell is happening there?
Yeah, so all the people, I mean, I don't know if I didn't hear that when I was sitting outside. And so all the people, like, as I opened the door, they just all looked at me like, what the hell is happening in there? And I was like, there's me. And then also, but it's the way that I was just meant to scream with my mouth wide open and like tearing through the clouds. And then all of a sudden I just stopped dead in my tracks and went, no, sorry, I can't do this anymore. Like,
I think that's great that you actually owned that moment. Or like, no, this is mad. Because I would have just carried on doing it, I think.
Screaming until you hit the floor.
Yeah, basically. And then I wandered like a turkey out the door.
Not for me, not at all. Like, not, no. I didn't want to start getting to the point where they're like, right, your parachute hasn't opened. Yeah. So now you're not getting that on your gag reel. Shove it up your ass, I'm going.
Good adverts are mad, aren't they? Some of the stuff, like adverts, are just all a bit mad because they're trying to get like ridiculous.
Well, it's sort of high concept.
Grab attention, and so everything's a bit like heightened, and it's all just ridiculous. And they're always trying to get you to do stupid stuff. So I think that's just kind of the way adverts are, especially if they don't tell you. Sometimes they tell you, "Oh, it's for this company, and you've got to do this and this." And then sometimes they just leave it like that, leave it kind of as a surprise, which I think is really unfair on the performance.
Yeah. It is, but there you go. They've got their 10 seconds of screaming. That's what they wanted.
I wonder who got that gig. I'm trying to have I seen that advert? I wonder who got it as well.
But, whoever got it, I feel very sorry for it.
They earned it. They earned it.
Yeah, they earned the money, bless them.
I wanted to go back to the, you was obviously saying about being creative with your characters and stuff. And obviously in the past you've played characters where you've had a lot of creative kind of control with regards to your input into it, but I know in recent years you've been playing more like real life kind of characters, people that, you know, have come, you know, from the real world, as it were, biopics and stuff like that. How do you find that creative process of bringing some of yourself to those kind of roles?
It's interesting, really, because when you're playing you know, just characters that are kind of written, you can kind of put your own interpretation on them, like, massively. It's all, you know. But I guess when you're playing, like, real people, like when I did Des, that was the same situation. I played Lenny McLean's wife.
Yeah.
Now I'm obviously playing Colleen Rooney. I think you just kind of have to find the strong basis of that person first. Everyone in every walk of life, every different character you play, everyone has different priorities, and everyone has priorities in their life and what's important to them. And it's that's what makes them tick. Yeah. So it's what their priorities are. It's what their,
like values.
That's it. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
What their core values are. So when you get their priorities and their values and what they respect in life, what the dislikes are, just things like that, you're building a strong foundation, and then you kind of go from there. So once you find them, you've got your strong basis, and then it's kind of like a tree effect. Once you've got those roots, mm-hmm. you kind of then introduce people who's in the script. So I kind of start off with them, their values, their core beliefs, their, you know, their points of view on life, priorities. And then kind of the trunk is like the family, the friends that come into the script and their opinions on all of those people and mm-hmm. how they rate them as people. And then that the branches is kind of like the accent, you know, things like that, the way that they look, their hair, the way that they hold themselves, their mannerisms. So it's kind of step-by-step process for me. You know, yeah, it's kind of like a tree effect, I guess.
Yeah. That's a really nice way of looking
really
at it.
Nice. Really nice.
Is that solely from reading the script, or do you start very early to like look outside of the script at, you know, researching them as individuals and their history?
Or do you meet them? Do you have to meet them?
I've not met any of mine, no, which is a shame because I'd love to. Some wasn't physically possible, obviously. And some time just doesn't permit either. And I think sometimes I don't want to like just be reaching out to people like, hey, I'm playing you.
Let's hang out.
I'd be like, sorry, who are you?
Yeah.
And no, I don't. Good luck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I get, I'm quite a private person myself as well. And so I understand people are like that. So I don't just want to be like sometimes production have reached out, like if I'm playing people that have like had drug addiction or alcohol addiction or things like that, like we'll reach out to people that are happy to sit and talk to me, and I'll talk to them as well, so they feel like we're both sharing stories, not just those that them doing that. So that's okay. But yeah, in terms of like meeting the people and things, I'd love to, and I would definitely try to if I can, but I'd have to do it in a respectful way for me to feel comfortable to do that for them as well. So I forgot what I was saying. So I do like to, I do start off with the script because that's the narrative. That's the narrative that we're saying to that audience that we're about to show. So I start from then, it's all her opinions, and that is based on here. And then I'll get a secondary. So I go through and I write down all my instincts, my first instincts to each line and what it is and how I am and what I'm doing and what my hands are doing as I naturally read it, my instincts that come in. And then I kind of cross-reference it with the character breakdown that I've done from either books that they've written or archives or interviews that they've done. Do you know, things like that? So then I can kind of cross-reference the person, and, you know, there's a lot of work that I try, I do put a lot of work in there. And that's kind of how I do it.
Yeah. Well, guys, going back to that hardworking, you know, talking right at the start of the pod about working upbringing, you know, clearly you put that into your work as well when it comes to researching these people.
Yeah, definitely. There's a job to be done, and you want to, all these people that I play, they're almost like little, like I say little because I don't have my own yet, they're like my little miniature children. That's how I feel, like you kind of feel really responsible for who you're playing.
And I do take
it quite seriously, really. I have fun, obviously, on set, you know, I have a laugh and stuff. I don't take myself seriously much at all, but in terms of the characters I play, they do become like your little children, and like everything that you do is a little string to the bow.
Well, I guess you've got to care for them, haven't you? Otherwise you can't portray them in the right way.
Definitely. I mean, let's be honest, if I was playing like Humpty Dumpty or something like that, I probably wouldn't really give it. you know.
Or waddling turkey.
If I'm jumping out of a plane or I'm playing a little waddling turkey, then I probably wouldn't give that much thought into the character process of those stupid things. But in terms of like playing
What's this turkey's ambition?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is he going from one end of the road to the other?
What are his motivations?
What's his motivation?
To get to the roast potatoes? So I think, you know, when you're playing characters in real life, people obviously, I do take it to heart.
So has the Colleen Rooney stuff been filmed yet? Or is that...
That's been filmed. So literally I got the audition, had a recall, and then before I knew it, I was getting flown to Budapest to film it.
Wow. So it's quite a whirlwind almost. I mean, it's an extraordinary story. We all sort of saw it in real time on social media. Mm. But then when the court case happened, I remember I was listening to a BBC did like a sort of podcast, which was like every day of the trial. So it was like kind of, it was one of those kind of stranger than fictions kind of situations.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, it was because I'd not followed it personally. I had not very long time to get my head around the whole concept, but that wasn't a problem. I had the transcripts. I read all the transcripts of court, so I had that all under my belt. I knew how she, crossed the T's and dotted the I's. I know, you know, how she felt. I watched documentaries and things and interviews with her. I'd done everything that I could to get this person to get clean in my head. I'm glad that I probably didn't follow the trial because I could just kind of go in blind and have the script and the transcripts and who she was as a person, and that's all that mattered to me. I didn't need to know about the gossip. I didn't need to know about what newspapers thought or about what everybody else thought. I didn't need to know that, and I'm glad that I didn't. My knowledge was clean as a person, her transcripts, what she did, what she thought, and how she was in that moment. And so I was in my own bubble, and that was fine. So I'm glad, really.
Yeah, I think, there's such a whirlwind around it, and, you know, the tabloid media and stuff. It's good that you aren't being influenced by any of those things. You could just go in kind of blind. I think that's going to mean that you can put more... of your own sort of
realism,
because
like I've said a lot in some of the interviews I've done, these aren't caricatures of people. No. I mean, especially being in this industry, you meet, you know, famous people, and I do that in inverted commas, as you go through life, and the more that you spend time with them and the more that you meet loads more other people, you just think, oh my god, everyone's just normal people at the end of the day. Everyone gets annoyed. Everyone's annoyed, you know what I mean? If she's annoyed that she's, you know, and you just start to realise that everyone's just normal people. Everyone just has jobs.
Yeah.
So it's like people are actors, people work in the NHS, people work at a desk, people are data inputters, people work in Thornton. I've worked in Thornton's. Ice in the chocolates. It doesn't matter what you do. Everyone's the same. And so with this story, I didn't want to start being like, oh my God, you're playing Colleen Rooney, the footballer's wife of Wayne Rooney. I'm just playing a woman who has four children and has a husband, and that's it.
Yeah. And went through, like, it's actually, because obviously, like, we see it as, like, when it's sensationalized on Twitter and stuff, it's like, oh, this, like, oh, fascinating, interesting kind of, you know, sensationalist trial. But actually, they are people. And for Colleen, it would have been really stressful. All the thing with, like, putting out the messages and, like, really stressful, horrible, intrusive time. And her and Wayne have been, I say, like, I know them now, her and Wayne Rooney have been famous since they're about 17. They've been
a
long time to be sort of in the public eye and have those kind of stresses and stuff. So I'm sure she wouldn't take any decisions of what she did lightly. Like, it was clearly a really intrusive, horrible time actually to go through.
Yeah, massively. And every, you know, imagine like doing everything and a hunt, like thousands of people. Like, imagine stepping out your door and just doing something normal, and like thousands of people all are just having an opinion on it.
Yeah.
You'd be like, I'm not that interested. Like, don't, like, there's no need for 1,000 opinions for every time I do something. Like, it must just be crazy. It's something we don't understand. And like you say, in a world that we live in now, we have phones. we Instagram, we're looking at people's lives constantly. We are so consumed in how other people's lives look and what they're doing and what they're up to and where they're eating and what they're eating. Yeah. We are so obsessed with other people's lives. Like, close your door, do some, you know what I mean? Don't worry about anybody else. Focus on yourself. You know what I mean? That's why I just try and live quite a bit. I love my holidays. I love treating myself to nice things every now and again. You don't see it posted. I post the odd photo, like, oh, I'm here, you know. That'll be the first one for a couple of months. Or, you know, I just think that we're so consumed in that. And it can turn quite unhealthy. People can start getting quite obsessed with people's lives and opinions on it. And I just think, you know what, there's life's so short. Just enjoy yourself with your time and your children and your family and things that you enjoy doing instead of worrying about what anyone else is doing and like putting things online. You know, I don't know. It's just...
It's a balance. Yeah. It's a balance, isn't it? I think it's a balance between enjoying the good things of social media and what they can, and it can be really good for connecting people, has to be, you know, with this podcast, but it's using it, you know, without going overboard, I guess.
That's it. I think so. There's a balance, yeah.
Having said that, when's the show out? Because I'm definitely going to watch it.
Having said that, make sure that you get yourself on the settee.
Make sure you tune in.
Yeah. I don't actually know when the release date is. They've not actually said, but I'm pretty sure it is mid-December.
Have they called it Wagatha Christie?
No, it is called Vardy v Rooney, I think it's called.
It is, a courtroom drama. It's on Channel 4.
A courtroom drama.
Because Wagatha Christie was...
It's
so
one of the best
good.
Puns ever.
Whoever came up with that is an absolute genius. It's
It was some amusing memes and stuff going around. Yeah. I saw all of those. Cool blimey
yeah, indeed. Oh man,
well Chanel, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a real joy, and we'll wish you all the luck with everything you've got going on and all the next projects, and we can't wait to watch Vardy versus Rooney, and I'm sure it's going to be brilliant. But thank you so much.
And hot yoga.
Yeah, and good luck with the hot yoga.
Thank you. Well, I was meant to go this. Yeah. Well, I was meant to go this morning, but because I had this, you've actually stopped.
Oh,
well,
no!
I hope you feel absolutely shocking. So instead,
I'm really happy. I'm going to keep smiling.
Yeah,
you keep tripping yourself, and now I've got to go and get some baubles for my tree.
Oh man. Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to go and do hot yoga as tenants. I think I'm going to go and try it out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. See you later, guys.
Chanel Creswell on the Blank Podcast. What a fantastic guest. So easy to talk to. Some wonderful insights into her career as an actor. I love the analogy of the tree and the putting the roots down.
Yeah, I like that
about
as
the
well.
Character. That's... Beautifully put. Yeah. I mean, we basically got a sort of 10-15 minute acting class there.
Yeah.
You know, so if you are someone that's thinking about acting, well, there you go. There's some fantastic insight. Beautifully sort of just explained as to how she gets into the minds of characters she plays when they're real people. So I loved it. I'm sure she's going to be fantastic as Colleen Rooney in the Rooney versus Vardy. They should have called it Wagatha Christie, but it's fine.
But
it's
maybe
still
that's
going to be a great
they
show.
Might have patented that phrase.
It was someone on Twitter, just some random person on Twitter that came out. I hope
so
they
good.
Copyrighted it or patented it.
It's a work of genius, that.
Absolute genius,
It's really fascinating. I'm always fascinated hearing about people's processes, like with regards to any kind of creative thing. But acting in particular is quite interesting because it feels quite mystical. And I think if you're playing, like I'm always interested in kind of biopics and real life kind of stuff. So it was really fascinating to hear how she goes about, you know, doing that. And must be tricky. And also not to read too much, you know, not to go into the research, you know, looking at all the tabloids and all that kind of stuff, actually just taking the words in front of her from the script and then developing the character through the words that have been written, which is interesting.
Because there's a lot of weight of responsibility, I think, of playing characters like that, and you probably feel like you want to do them justice. And I know that, you know, having been cast to play a Christmas turkey, that there is, you know, there's a real weight of expectation.
Did you go and hang around like a turkey farm?
Turkey farm, yeah. Gobble gobble, yeah.
Do you, you know, watching their movements, see how they go from side to side.
How they wobble a bit under their chin. Yeah, got to get that wobble right. So, yeah, I think it's important to, you know, to
go full method.
I didn't even do the casting. I didn't even do it. So I'll never get asked to do that again. Anyway, great guest. Loved having her on. Brilliant, brilliant person. And wish her all the best for the future. And do check out, Giles, what's it actually called? The title? It's called Rooney versus Vardy.
It's called Vardy versus Rooney, the courtroom drama. And it's on Channel 4. It's a two-part thing, so yeah,
brilliant. Do check it out, because not only will Chanel be absolutely fantastic in it, it's a great story.
Yeah,
I will 100% be watching that. I can't wait.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with it.
I mean, I don't know if you were listening to at the time. I was kind of there was a podcast. I think I said mention it on our podcast. There was a podcast the BBC did, which was kind of a, you know, like the days in court where people, journalists were kind of talking about what had happened in court, and it's just so bizarre. The turn of events was just so kind of crazy, really. I suppose, you know, I don't want to say, you know, too much to give away what happened, but no one really came out of it that well, I don't think.
Well, one side definitely didn't.
Yeah.
The other side, maybe
a bit bitter.
Bit more, because I think it was, I go into it, but yeah, anyway, yeah. There was a couple around the time. There was a couple of reporters on TikTok. One of them's called Jim Masterson. I think he works for BuzzFeed or something like that. Who were doing a similar thing, like roundups, like TikTok roundups each day from the case, and it was just compelling viewing. And actually, it's interesting watching TikTok be a platform for people to do that. Actually, and hadn't seen that before. And actually, podcasts as well. You know, I've never followed a court case like that before on a podcast or TikTok. But actually, these platforms are perfect for the little bite-sized roundups. Actually, it was
happened before with the in fact, funny enough, with the Depp Heard trial, that kind of and then this one came quite quickly afterwards. So these sort of defamation trials, quite, you know, it's quite a lot of people, I guess, because they're high profile people involved. I think that is kind of set a precedent for. I think we'll see those more and more now. If these high profile trials will be, Well, who knows, in years to come, we might even see televised trials.
Well, there's a move. Sorry, listeners, to really derail this, but there's a move, especially wrapping up as per we're chatting for ages. There's a, because in the US, you can, trials are televised.
Yes. Yeah.
Not all of them. I'm guessing like family ones
I think it's often chosen. One of the parties might choose, like, well, for example, the Depp Heard trial. I think Johnny Depp wanted it to be televised. Right. And his lawyers fought for that. And then it's up to the judge in those cases to decide. Yeah.
Whether it's in the public interest, but in the UK it's not. They are not, which is why you still get those terrible courtroom drawings.
Yes, they're brilliant.
Did you see some of the Wayne Rooney ones?
Yes,
he got butchered. The poor guy, he just got slaughtered alive. Oh my god,
they were just amazing.
But not kind to him at all. Or Vardy, they made Vardy look like Albert Steptoe. They were just not kind to him at all. But I still like that. I like that in the UK we're still 30 years behind, and we do our like dainty little courtroom. But
can they not get better people to draw the pictures?
No, they seem to intentionally get really bad people. So what? There must be someone that can do a better one now. I know it's quick, but like, I get not that quick.
Yeah,
they were there for hours.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in some respects, would it be better to get someone who can do like caricatures, perhaps, maybe like a quick caricature?
That'd be much better. Yeah. That'd be much better. Or like a Banksy style thing. It's like a stencil and you can't really make them out, but it's just, it adds more kind of like feeling.
Yeah, or sort of Damien Hirst, you could get like a more conceptual.
Like Tracy Emin.
Yeah, like a picture of Wayne Rooney in formaldehyde or something.
In the corner of the courtroom, just like chucking buckets of paint against the wall.
Yeah, Jackson Pollock it all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, mate, it'd be so much better.
I know. They've missed the trick there.
Yeah, they have. Anyway, we didn't miss a trick with this week's guest, Chanel Cresswell. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Fantastic guest, and really enjoyed it. Now, in part one, we didn't read any tweets out. Giles, would we like to do some? I am scrolling through.
You're hovering over one, then please do read it.
Well, here's an interesting one, actually. It's not about
interesting. A podcast.
Good. No, it's different.
Strong
different.
Start.
I said that for a reason. It's from Susan Seddon, and Susan's one of our regular listeners.
Yes.
And it was around Spotify Wrapped, and she said, I predict my top podcast will be Blank Pod.
Oh, how nice.
And she hasn't followed up, so I don't know if we are or not, but hopefully we're her.
It's nice because we are seeing people posting those on social media, and it'd be nice to think that we were someone's top podcast for the year.
If we were your top pod on Spotify Wrapped, let us know. Contact us on any social media platform. I say any. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at
Blank Pod.
Indeed. And let us know if we're top of your list.
Yeah. I have actually got a review here from iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it's called now. This is from Philly M. It says, so glad I recently discovered this podcast. Love the variety of guests and topics covered. Honest, insightful, and downright hilarious. As an actor, I found these conversations to be invaluable. Keep up the good work, team. 5 stars. So thank you very much.
That's amazing. And they'll like this week's as an actor because you've got an acting class from Chanel there. So yeah, lovely. Thank you so much. What a great review. Please do keep reviewing us on iTunes or wherever you get your pods, and subscribe and like and all that kind of stuff, because it helps other people see the pods as well. So please do that. That's it, Giles, I think, for this week.
It is. We've probably been going on too long.
Oh,
this episode, not like in general.
So I'm on Susan's Twitter. Sorry, Susan. I'm sort of stalking you. And I found her Spotify Wrapped. And would you like to know where we are? We are in her top 5. Would you like to know where we are?
I'd love to know.
We're number 1, baby.
Hey!
Number 1.
At last, Susan, number 1.
Number 1. And there's some good other pods in there. So Clinton Baptiste, 2nd.
Oh, fantastic. Nice.
Alex, good old Alex.
Yeah.
2 Shot Pod, 3rd. Lovely pod. Nice. My Time Capsule, 4th.
Oh, excellent. Mike. Good Mike, yeah. God, we've had most of those people on our podcast. And then
The Rest is Politics, number 5. I don't know that one.
That is Alistair Campbell and...
Oh, Ed Miliband.
No.
Oh, Rory, what's
his name? Rory Stewart.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah, they're... Although I would wish... I don't ever want to say horrible things about other podcasts, but I think Rory's maybe not very often in either in the UK or near a microphone, because he's often on a sort of Zoomy sort of thing. So, Alistair always sounds pristine. He's obviously got a mic set up, but Rory needs to get a mic set up.
Mic game.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a good, content-wise, excellent.
We should try and get them on. They'd be really good.
They would. Well, we'll set to it.
Anyway. Have a good week, everyone. Charles, have a good week. Hope you have a good one.
Thank you, and you.
Thanks very much. And we're back next week, of course, with... Oh, we've only got a few left before our Christmas break, actually, haven't we? So only a few more to go before Christmas, but we've got... back next week with another guest on the Blank Pod. Why am I butchering this exit so much?
I don't know, but we probably should just wrap up, shouldn't we?
Bye.
This is a Glassbox Media Podcast.